Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
And we are getting into a subject. I think you've you've done this series before, but you're going to take a different take on it this time. Titling assets?
Yeah.
What does this mean, titling assets, and how does that apply to estate planning?
Yeah, we've mixed this topic in quite often when we talk about wills or trust and entitling your assets so that it integrates with the plan as a whole. So what is titling assets and why is it so important? Because how the asset is titled, in other words, whose name is on the asset? So is it in your name? Is it in your joint name with a spouse? Is it in your joint name with a child? Do you have a partner in businesses and IRAs? What beneficiary do you use? All of this is titling an asset. And in estate planning, if we do a detailed plan, I don't care if we do a will plan, a trust plan, because remember, those are the only two types of plans that we can really do. Those are the foundational two types of plans, a will plan or a trust-based plan, then it is critical to have all of your assets integrated and aligned with what you just created. So if I have beneficiaries in my will or in my trust, but then I have different beneficiaries on a life insurance policy or beneficiaries on an IRA, then we did not integrate that plan well. And what I find is that many times we get an estate plan, an attorney does not detail each and every asset to ensure that the plan that was just created now has all the assets moving in the same direction, and that we are able to predict and know that if somebody becomes incapacitated or someone passes away, because those are the two times when the plan has to be enacted, that indeed the assets will follow this detailed plan that we just put together. Or oftentimes, maybe the assets are aligned properly with the plan, but yet we haven't considered the numerous different possibilities of the what-ifs to make sure that over time, that as life changes, as law changes, as our beneficiaries, their lives change, that indeed the plan will continue to operate as we put it together. So titling, how we hold assets, in whose name are the assets titled? How are they held? It is a critical issue in estate planning, because if we don't do it, then titling ends up taking over and the plan is put to the side. And that is that's really the crux of what we need to talk about.
So this is a lot more than just the accurate description of an asset.
Right.
This, like the red coat versus just the coat.
Right.
I'm thinking about physical things.
Yes.
Obviously, financial assets are a whole different bag, but even when it comes to physical assets that you're trying to pass on, like we've talked about the favorite chair, things
right.
like that.
Absolutely.
Like how do you title something like that?
Yeah, and you don't, because a chair doesn't have a title. You buy it and you own it.
Right.
And right, so that's where the philosophy of ownership is 9/10 of the law, which is not true, by the way. So phraseologies like that, which is if you possess it, it's yours. And so with tangible personal property is what the technical term is to our stuff or junk, however you want to call it, whatever affinity you put towards your stuff, that ultimately, because there is no title to a chair, then that is an estate planning document issue. Have we detailed in the document what happens to things, or are there things such as a memorandum of tangible personal property? That's where you make a list and write down, my office chair goes to my whoever, right? And there is a description of the item and who receives it. So while we can't title that specific asset or the wedding ring or the jewelry or the clothes, the pots and pans and everything else that we own.
The coin collection.
Yes, the coin collection. Then because those do not are not held in title per se, then the estate plan itself has to do an excellent job of directing those assets. Now, unfortunately, with that topic, as a matter of fact, we just did a series on that. So you can go to legacyandfaith.com and look up our past podcast. We did multiple podcasts on that topic alone, that of how to deal with your personal property to ensure that it doesn't cause the family mess. And because that's the weakness of almost every plan. And but we can't title it, but we can direct it. That is the document, and that is finding the right attorney who will guide you in how to do that properly so that it doesn't become the weakness of your estate plan. But titling assets are the ones that we actually do own by title one way or another. So, for example, when you fill out an application for with any financial institution, you are telling them who the owner is going to be. And so that is a title. A specific owner goes on to that asset, such as a bank account. So if you bank at, name any bank you bank with, you fill out an application, and if you put your name only and you're married, then your spouse does not have legal rights to that asset. And so, therefore, if you don't fill out a beneficiary or anything else, now we are driving that particular asset towards a probate potentially. So if you own it as a married couple and you put both of your names, so in a married situation, that's the most common. It's called joint ownership, right? And oftentimes there's an opportunity to check with rights of survivorship. You can mark it as community property. So there's many different ways that we hold title. And all of that matters when it comes to someone passing away or becoming incapacitated on who has legal rights to come into and manage that asset, and or if you pass away, who is going to receive and have legal claim on that asset. So each of these titling delineations is very important. And when we create an estate plan, we have to go through the assets and make sure that indeed they line up. So there's different ways that you can hold property. Number one is you can hold it separately or individually. And so that's, again, where I open up a bank account, I open up an investment, I buy a house, whatever the case may be, and I put my name on it only. Now, because we are in Washington State, there is a thing called a presumption of community property. I am married. If I bought a piece of property in my own personal name and never put my wife's name on that piece of property, it is presumed to be ours together because we are married. So there has to be specific titling for me to delineate or to specify that I am holding that as my own separate property. So therefore, I would have to actually title something as Paul Grant, a married man, holding as his separate property, as an example.
Does this happen a lot?
Yes, sure.
Okay.
Sure. And here's where it happens is if my parents die, I receive an inheritance and I take that and I buy a rental property, for example. And now my wife and I make an agreement that, okay, that came from your family. So that is, I'm going to allow you to manage that for yourself and leave it to our kids or leave it to me or to leave it to charity or do whatever you want to do because it came from your side of the family. We're not going to bring that into the marriage. We're going to hold it separately. That's probably the most common time when we see separate property. The other time is if I had...
I thought that's almost always folded right into the joint property.
Well, that's ultimately how things work is that I receive an inheritance and I throw it into our joint account.
I know that's what spouse hopes.
Yes. Well, but even if we have no discussion and if I have a long-term healthy marriage, then it's the natural response just to throw it into our joint account. And so therefore, usually separate property that comes from an inheritance or gift or other things that ultimately ends up being mixed into the marriage and becomes community property, but you can hold it separately. The other time that I see this is in second marriages, to where there's been a divorce in the past.
Sure.
There's been wounds and difficulties of splitting property. And so remarriage times often create a separateness in the assets, and they want to do estate planning together, but they have deemed I brought that into the marriage, and then the other spouse brought that into the marriage. So therefore, those are going to remain as our own separate
property. Is this where prenup agreements come in?
Yeah.
Is that what a prenup is?
Yeah, prenup is trying to make a distinction in two things. What property did you bring, and what debts did you bring into a marriage, and how are we going to treat that property should we be end up being divorced? So that's what a prenup is trying to do. But even just by your actions and by how you live life, you can create separate property by holding it separate if you've brought something into the marriage. So those are the two most common times when I see a married couple actually trying to keep property separate instead of automatically bringing it into a joint account and making it community property. Now, again, most of the time in long-term marriages, that inheritances and gifts, they're just brought in. And if you've been married for a period of years, even if you've had that under your name and you never put your spouse's over a period of time, because you typically use that account to support the marriage and other things, it becomes community property. But this is important in how, if someone were to die, that property is going to be distributed. So even as a married individual, if my spouse and I agree that that is going to be separate property for one of us, and we hold true to that in how we act and use that account, then when that separate property owner dies, we go to the beneficiary clause and or the will and or the trust, depending on how you are going to direct that asset, because you're going to be the only one on title in separate property. And when it's titled that way, then we're going to lean upon the estate plan to say, what do we do with this? So therefore, title matters greatly. Similarly, if I have everything, because I've been married for 32 years, if I have everything under my wife and I's name, okay, so I have it all under our together joint name, one of us dies, and then the asset is automatically the ownership of the survivor of us. So there's a couple other joint ways to title assets that would actually allow me to leave it. Community property allows that. But for the most part, married individuals have each other on property together, have each other on assets together, have each other as beneficiaries to their retirement accounts. And the thought process is everything is going to my spouse. And if things are properly titled, we can avoid probate that way. But when we have that separate property, if we do no longer have a spouse, then we're set up to where title becomes paramount. And by the way, even when you're married, let me say this as we head into the break. Even when you're married, if this is a second marriage, if this is a blended family, you may not just be leaving things to your spouse as you think. And or you may be unintentionally disinheriting your children should you die. So blended families, I always talk about this. There's two estate plans that are very difficult. I'll kind of deal with both of them through this series, which is blended families and business owners. If you are either, if you fit either of those categories, estate planning is critical for your family, and to make sure that your assets are going to pass smoothly, that the transition, if you become incapacitated or die, is exactly what you envision. Otherwise, boy, it's a roll of the dice if you're just kind of living life and not taking care of this critical component.
titling assets in estate planning. It's an important issue, and we will get back to it here in just a moment. People are intrigued by your approach, Paul. How do they find out more about your services?
Well, head over to our website. That's the easiest place to find us, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's ways to communicate with us, educational opportunities that are coming up. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week with Paul. He is talking about the importance of titling assets properly in your estate planning. And why is the title of an asset so important, Paul?
Yeah, it really dictates how that asset is going to be transferred specifically at your death. So, for example, if I have a will and I have one of my daughters on my bank account with me, okay, number one, stop putting your kids on your assets. Okay, number two, we'll get to that in a little bit. So then I die, but my will says, hey, split everything between my two girls and make sure everything goes equally. However, I have put one of my daughters on title. Remember, I was just talking before break that when you have a joint asset, the presumption is that that joint owner is going to now take full ownership when the first joint owner dies. So therefore, what I have potentially and inadvertently done is that if I have a bank account and one of my daughters is on that bank account because somehow we thought that was a good idea. The better idea is to do good estate planning, by the way. We can resolve any of your concerns and fears with good estate planning. You don't need to bring your kids onto title. So that is the
better. Or bank accounts.
Bank accounts. You don't have to bring them onto your investments. You don't have to bring them onto your house. Please don't put them onto your house. Estate planning is the better option. So, therefore, I've died. Now, my daughter is a joint owner on that account because I brought her on. And maybe my mentality is, well, I just need someone to help me pay my bills. And if I die, they can have the access and all these other things. So, therefore, I brought my daughter onto the bank account for whatever a myriad of different reasons why people do it, because they just heard their next door neighbor do it and that was great. Or my parents did it and it was so easy. So now legally what's happened is that my daughter is the sole legal owner of that bank account. And now I have an asset that is not going to the will. It is going to be divided. Instead of being divided by the terms of the will, it is now the legal ownership of my daughter. And now I am relying upon her good graces to use that money to pay things for the estate and or to divide it with her sister. Well, there's always problems with that, which is there's a potential gift tax issue that we have to do. You can only give so much money to one individual. I don't care if you think it's an inheritance or if that was the intent. Intent doesn't matter in this scenario. It's who owns legal title. So title is critical because it tells us what is going to happen to that property, whether it is real property, whether it's an investment account, whether it's a bank account. It all matters when you die. How does that property move to the beneficiaries? And what instrument is going to rule the day in moving that. So if there is joint ownership because there is already ownership to the joint to two people, then that is going to stay with the joint owner, even if you had a different intent. Mm. And if there's real property, then and you're the only owner at death, then that is going to potentially and most likely have to go through a probate process in order for us to sell it or in order for us to transfer it to your beneficiaries and follow the will. So often – and then beneficiary designations are an issue of contract. So when I sign up with whatever your favorite investment company is, or maybe it's not your favorite one, but your work has a 401k, for example. Mm. And so they use a investment company in the background, a Schwab, it doesn't even matter, a Vanguard, a TD Ameritrade, whatever the case may or may not be. There is an investment company back there. So again, when you fill out an application and you say, these are going to be my beneficiaries, then they have a contractual obligation to follow those instructions when they accept them. And what if you didn't change your beneficiaries? Now it's going to go according to whatever the beneficiary designation is, versus that asset will never come to the will or the trust because by contract, it has to be separated according to whatever you told the company. So when you hold title, it actually is doing estate planning. Whenever you open up an application, whenever you buy a piece of property, whenever you fill out a beneficiary designation, you are doing estate planning. And most people never bring or call their estate planner into that conversation to make sure that it's done properly. Then we have life go along. Do you know how many ex-spouses are on life insurance policies at work? Do you know how many, unfortunately, deceased children, if you've lost a child before before you've passed away and you put them on as a beneficiary designation?
What happened there?
Well,
if there's
it depends
a person
on the
who's
contract.
Deceased. Yeah, okay.
And so remember, because in a beneficiary designation, the contract rules the day. And if I have a deceased beneficiary, then the contract may tell us, well, then give it to the other beneficiaries. It may say, go find that deceased.
Or we keep it.
No, it's not going to be that. It's not
going to
be that. But it's going to be, go find the deceased beneficiary's heirs, and maybe they're minors. Mm. I've gone through multiple probates, not of my own clients, but I didn't do the estate planning, but where the beneficiary thought that they were being really nice and put a minor on a 401k because they didn't have children of their own, so they put one of their nieces or nephews on as a beneficiary, and they're 13 years old. I'm telling you, that is a long road and immeasurable court interference to get to that money, and it's expensive to get to it. If you want to use it, most courts are going to demand that whoever is put in as the custodian comes to the court and gets permission. There's many hoops to jump through. So we don't think we're going to die tomorrow. And so we make these decisions thinking that we're going to be alive for the next 20 years. And when I die, that this now 10-year-old is going to be at least 30, and that's going to be fine until all of a sudden something happens and it's our turn to go home long before we anticipated. So again, making stuff up or having good intention is not the right answer. Getting good estate planning done is always the right answer because we could have developed a plan around that where we would have never had court interference and where it would have gotten to the minor in the appropriate way under the mother's care as it was designed and as the desire would have been. And because I just don't know when it's my turn to go home. So therefore, I need to have a good, strong estate plan, not just title things willy-nilly or put minors on or bring your kids onto houses. Please, let's use wisdom. It's the word talks about that we need to use wisdom and we need to be shrewd in using this world's system in order to create a proper plan so that our stewardship of what God has given us is going to be found complete and not lacking. Mm. And so good estate planning is going to always be the answer. But remember, you open up a new account how you title that, you've just done estate planning. You open up a beneficiary designation or name somebody on a beneficiary of your 401k, your IRA, you've just done estate planning. And so is it aligning with what your estate plan does? And how old is your estate plan? If it's more than 3 to 5 years old, then it's time to actually get it reviewed. And that's because banks don't like older financial power of attorneys. They don't want them more than 3 years old. I went to more than 20 different banks when I started my practice about 10 years ago. And I asked them, how old do you want a power of attorney? Every single one of them, I think except one, said 3 years. The other one said five. So that puts us between 3 and 5 years that you should be looking at your financial power of attorney minimally. And much happens in that 3 years. Legally, it happens. With taxes, it happens. In your family, it happens. With your finances. So we need to keep your estate plan up to date. Then when you have a good, strong estate plan and we look at your assets as a part of the whole package and align all of your assets, now we have a plan that is going to stand the test of time and actually operate according to what your vision is and how you want everything to smoothly happen when it's your time to go home instead of leaving things by chance.
Titling assets, so important in estate planning. We'll continue this discussion next time. People are intrigued. They want to know more about your services. Paul, how do they do that?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, ways to communicate with us, upcoming educational opportunities. It can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
And this is the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.